What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
This is Law and Disorder here on KPFA in Berkeley. I'm your host, sitting in for Kat Brooks, Condoleezza Shimaringa. As previously reported here on Law and Disorder, Sudan has been ravaged by civil war since April 2023, when a power struggle between the military and a militia known as the Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, exploded into open warfare. On the second anniversary of the start of the conflict, more than 13 million people had been displaced, and half of the 51 million people in Sudan's population needed food aid. This past August, the UN said more than 600,000 people had been displaced from the city, while 260,000 still trapped there were cut off from aid. Alaa Suleiman is the Human and Professional Development Officer at the Sudanese Association of Northern California. She works there to empower Sudanese American individuals through career guidance and community-based support. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Alaa.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So, just going back over a quick refresher, who are the Rapid Support Forces, and what is it that they believe in? What do they say they're fighting for?
So the Rapid Support Forces, previously known or also known as the Janjaweed, were a paramilitary force that was used back in the early 2000s by the Sudanese government to, you know, commit all kinds of atrocities and crimes, especially in the West Sudan region, Darfur. You know, it's been all over the news since then, and they have committed all kinds of violence, including like burning down cities, massacres, you know, sexual violence, you name it. And so they, in essence, they were created and trained and made by the Sudanese government. They were under the Sudanese government, like orders for all these years, until in 2013 is when I think they were named the RSF, or they became an official force of the Sudanese army, but separate. And one of the main issues that we're dealing with right now that started the war back in 2023 was how, and so the Sudanese, the RSF was supposed to officially become part of the Sudanese army. And then there was a lot of argument about like how and that would work out, because the RSF started to fear to lose power and money. And I think the Sudanese army also feared that they were becoming more powerful, and hence, you know, they started fighting against each other in April of 2023.
So thanks to social media, I guess we can thank it, so much has been broadcast throughout the world regarding the genocide in Gaza. And we've been able to get reports on the ground from people there in Gaza. And as that momentum has fortunately increased, there was also the chorus of voices that told us, please don't forget about Haiti, don't forget about Congo, don't forget about Sudan. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed most recently video evidence of monstrous atrocities in Sudan, where the RSF has massacred people in hospitals, massacred people fleeing from the violence. What is it that they say they want? And not so much what is it, what, you have to forgive me, what are they doing over there? You're trying to control a country to liberate the people? Or what exactly, what is going on? As you can see, I'm tongue-tied. I don't know what to say about this, about the RSF. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the recent videos that you're talking about have been, I think the most have been covered about the Sudan war for the last two and mm-hmm. a half years. I don't think people have seen much of what was going on until the last mm-hmm. couple of weeks. And that's right. actually, ironically, it's due to their own doings. They're the ones who actually recorded these atrocities. They literally go live and record the videos as they're committing all these major, I don't even know what the word is, like you were mentioning, it's just horrific. It's monstrous. Mm-hmm. What do they want? I mean, the war started because they wanted to take over. They wanted to take over, the ruling of Sudan. However,
the ruling of Sudan to make life better for the populace or for themselves?
I mean, I don't know. It's interesting because they took over Khartoum very early on, the capital of Sudan. And however, you would think that they'd be like, okay, we're establishing government and, this is how things are going to go. But they haven't. And they've just kind of been going from one region to another and literally just, burning, killing, raping, and then being done with one area and going to the other. So there is definitely a lot of just hate and a lot of wanting to just steal and take, like in Khartoum, that's literally all they did. They just went into people's homes, they stole everything, they destroyed everything, and then they just left. And then now, obviously the what happened in Al-Fashir and West Sudan has been far worse because they literally just trapped people in there for many days. And then eventually they went in there and they massacred all of them. And those who were trying to flee, they still went after them. So, the problem is that they are obviously funded by other entities and other countries. So they continue to do that. And so that's why I believe in the beginning it was mentioned that this is a civil war. We don't believe that what's happening in Sudan is a civil war. We 100% believe it's a proxy war that's funded and it's of interest of other countries and other regions who are interested in the region of Sudan, and they're using the RSF as a way to do that. It's literally of they're getting rid of the identity of Sudan. It's literally like ethnic cleansing of the region of Sudan. And what is it going to be replaced by? I don't know, right? But we do know that there's a lot of interest in the region of Sudan because Sudan is extremely rich with many natural resources, of course, and then also many like gold areas and all of that. And it has been proven over and over in all of the news outlets that the UAE has played a big role in funding the RSF and getting gold in return. So I don't necessarily believe that it's just the RSF wanting to take over Sudan because they could have done that. But I think it's other entities who are also interested in the region. And they're very interested in destabilizing that region and keeping it that way until it's just there's no way for it to become of its own again. And someone else has to come in and quote unquote save it, if that makes sense.
You're listening to Law and Disorder here on KPFA in Berkeley. My name is Tandasiswa Shimaringa, and I'm sitting in for Cat Brooks. We're speaking with Ala Suleiman of the Sudanese the Sudanese Association of Northern California. I wanted to ask you about the United Arab Emirates, the UAE. You said that you and many others believe that what is happening, this monstrous atrocity, what is going on right now in Sudan is not a civil war, but a proxy war on behalf of the United Arab Emirates. The UAE, like Saudi Arabia and many of those other countries, are rich in natural resources. Why would they be sticking their nose, hands, feet, etc., into the Sudan? You're saying it's for more control of natural resources?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that the UAE is one of the parties that are interested in Sudan, and hence they are funding the RSF. And yes, I would agree that, you know, they're looking, you know, the more powerful you are, the more power you want. That's just, you know, just the nature of human beings. And they are, yeah, you're absolutely right. The UAE is an extremely rich country, and it's small in essence. However, you know, they've been involved in many ways in Sudan, in different ways. And so I think this is just one of the ways to gain more resources and power.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to the United Arab Emirates, are we able to see the footprint, fingerprint, shadow of Egypt, Israel, or the United States as well?
Well, the UAE is a close ally of the U.S. The U.S. is a close ally of Israel. So I think that's, you know, this one route. And Egypt has been supporting the Sudanese army, mainly because of, you know, they sharing the border and for their own safety as well.
I want to go back for a moment. Sudan in 2011. The southern region of Sudan, South Sudan, seceded from the country. And if my information is correct, it is in the south of Sudan where the majority of the country's oil fields are located. Now, at some point, I'm not sure, when South Sudan seceded, was Omar al-Bashir the president of the country at that point in time?
Yes, he was. He was the president for 30 years, 1989 through 2019.
Okay, and once South Sudan seceded, is that where we can kind of, maybe sort of, trace the roots of this quote-unquote proxy war, or?
Not that I'm aware of. I've never heard that connection. I think obviously when South Sudan split from Sudan, it weakens the country, right? Because you have a part of you that, as you mentioned correctly, is rich with oil and many other resources. When it splits from the country, it weakens it because you have a big population that you're no longer a part of. But, you know, that had its own set of politics at the time. And, when people voted, they voted for the separation.
Okay.
But I've never seen it connected directly to the war that's happening right now. The war that's happening right now is, to our understanding, is connected way more to the revolution that took over in 2019, when the people of Sudan and Khartoum and other areas of Sudan walked to the street. They just said enough is enough. They were started from December 2018 all the way until April 2019. And they finally pushed out the president, the dictator of 30 years, Omar al-Bashir. And they called for a civilian-led government. And they wouldn't go back even when he stepped down until, you know, there was like an intermediate shared civilian government that was created, and it was shared between the military and the civilians. And the plan was that for the next 4 years, this intermediate government will be 2 years for the civilians and 2 years for the military. And then 2023, we will have official elections for the people to choose whoever they want to run the country. And the first two years started with the military running. So in 2021, when it was supposed to switch to the civilian, there was a military coup in October of 2021 where the military took over and they said, we need to get, we need to be in charge of this. And then they dissolved all civilian committees that were created since the revolution. And then 2023 is when the election was supposed to happen. And that's when the war started. Because I don't believe they ever were willing to give it to the civilians. I mean, Sudan has been a military run for decades. And Omar al-Bashir, he's been ruling for 30 years. So you can imagine that there is just like they're rooted into the country and they're not going to let go easily. They're not going to let go easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So is Omar al-Bashir still on the scene, still in the mix, or has he?
No, he's not in the picture. So ever since he stepped down, they, assigned a couple of people. The people rejected them, I mean, the first, like, couple of weeks. And then Al-Burhan is the one that took over as the military general. And he's the one who's fighting against the RSF right now. So he's the one in the picture.
Okay. So in, earlier this year in June, the RSF took control of territory along Sudan's border with Libya and Egypt. They control almost all of Darfur. Mm-hmm. Again, what's been happening in, is it El-Fashir?
El-Fashir, yes.
El-Fashir.
Yeah.
They are moving throughout the countryside, moving throughout the country and wreaking havoc wherever they go. And as you pointed out, ironically, the majority of information that we and the rest of the world have been able to receive most recently has come from the RSF themselves broadcasting their atrocities. But can you, what do you know of journalists currently in the country? Is what's happening similar to what we have seen in Palestine with journalists?
As in being targeted, you mean?
Yes.
You know, like I mentioned, like up till a few weeks ago, you know, the, not much was coming out of Sudan except when you see, you know, civilians who are brave enough to try to, like, you know, just take a video of things. But we haven't really seen much coverage of Sudan. I'm not sure if there's a lot of journalists there to begin with and if they're allowed access. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it's so much that we need to know, so much that we don't know.
Right.
I shouldn't speculate, don't mean to ponder, but I'm just wondering, is it because of infrastructure in the country? Is it because of lack of access to technology, or is it just that people are under attack and running for their lives?
Yeah, I think I've always thought about it, like people always compare it to, like you mentioned earlier, to Gaza, right, and everything that's being documented. You have to think about, you know, like Gaza and Israel, and kind of like how Israel is attacking Gaza almost like, you know, from a distance, right? Like bombing them, whatever. The RSF is literally in the midst of people. So it's extremely dangerous. It's dangerous for people to actually try to go in where the conflict is. It's not a conflict where, you know, it's one country against the other. And, you know, like there may be some like safe areas. Nowhere is safe. They may show up at your house in any moment, in any time of the day. And they have, right? Starting from ever since it started in Khartoum, that's literally how it was. And so it's extremely difficult to have people who are going to commit to like documenting, because it literally puts their life at risk, you know? And these people are ruthless, as you mentioned, and monstrous. And so I think that's one of the biggest differences, is that it's not that there are safe areas because Israel is like, you know, focusing on the north side or the whatever, right? And then you can cover this side. Or are they just bombing? It's literally walking into your house, just like slaughtering people or killing them or shooting them down or raping them. So I think that's one of the biggest differences and one of the main reasons why we don't get enough coverage. And then also, I think we also have to talk about the fact that Blacks in Africa in general have always had like a backseat when it comes to coverage, when it comes to like international attention, you know what I mean? And so I definitely think that's a huge part of it, is that we don't like, you know, wars and genocide and atrocities that happen anywhere in the world get a very different attention than when it moves back to Africa. And there's this narrative that, oh, that's, you know, they've always been like that and what's new. And, you know, it's just like there is no real interest in trying to cover it or understand it even.
I've been speaking with Alaa Suleiman, Human and Professional Development Officer at the Sudanese Association of Northern California. Alaa, for listeners in the Bay Area, down in Los Angeles where I am, who want more information on what your organization is doing, who want more information on how they can possibly assist the Sudanese people, where can they get that information?
Right. So Sudanese Association of Northern California, we have our own website. We have our Facebook page. We're on Instagram, SANC Official. And please, you know, we try to update as much as we can on all our social media platforms. So our main role here in the Bay Area is to twofold, is to advocate and for Sudanese people in Sudan and, you know, educate about what's happening currently in the war. And also, most importantly, raising funds and donations to support the humanitarian need that's happening, that's needed over there. And that we go through two major organizations that are working on the ground that are, you know, registered nonprofit organizations here in the U.S. The first one is Sadaqat, S-A-D-A-G-A-T. We just recently had a fundraiser with them last weekend, and we were able to raise close to $500,000, which we're very grateful for. So you can go on their website and donate to the atrocities and help people who are displaced, or need medical care. Mm-hmm. The second one is the Sudanese American Physician Association. It's been working in Sudan before the war started. They were mostly focusing on medical care and medical support for different regions of Sudan. However, after the war, they've expanded their outreach, and they basically support with all kinds of needs, whether it's water or shelter, and of course, medical needs and hospitals. So these two organizations will be your go-to in case you want to support the people of Sudan, which I urge you to. These two organizations are trusted, are working on the ground. They have almost zero head cost. So the money goes directly to the people of Sudan. I can't vouch for any other organization other than those two. Mm-hmm. And then follow SANC, again, Sudanese Association of Northern California. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook for our events. Also, we have, if you're in the Bay Area, we have our own center in Hayward, in downtown Hayward. If you look us up, you'll find our address. We're usually there on the weekends. We try to have different events, you know, for the community and, you know, to advocate for Sudan. And then, you know, also have events for the local Sudanese community here in the Bay Area.
Well, Suleiman, thank you so much for being on Law and Disorder today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.